حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Allah, the words in the Quran are Allah's, is what Allah has chosen to put in. But many verses of the Quran are quotes from others. And Allah takes these quotes to give a message for mankind. So when we look at it, in reality, these are the words of shaitan in the Quran that Allah is quoting. And there are many places that we have read in the last 10 days where shaitan is speaking and he has said these things, and Allah has put those things in the Quran for us to learn from and to be guided. One of the things that shaitan said that we had mentioned is لَأَقُدَنَّ عَلَىٰ صِرَاطِكَ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ. He says that I will sit on صِرَاطِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ, meaning on your straight path. Whatever path leads to you, Allah, I will sit on that path so that anyone who comes on that path, I will meet them and I will greet them. So now when we look at this, we see another place where shaitan says, لَأَغْوِيَنَّهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ إِلَّا عِبَادَكَ مِنْهُمُ الْمُخْلَصِينَ. That I will misguide all of them, except your servants who are mukhlas. Now, when we look at these allegations of shaitan and we see how he misguides and what he does to misguide, there are three things that shaitan comes across and three groups of people that shaitan comes across in order to misguide people, in order to misguide a human being. And this is a fundamental division and a fundamental grouping that is used to recognize how shaitan misguides. And it is here that we, you know, obviously this is more has to do with human psychology and what he does to misguide. And here is where I want you all to really try to understand. We went through the history, we went through the places where shaitan has come and the weapons he has used. We went through the qualities of shaitan, but now, how does he actually do these things and what does he use? How are things and what does he use? So, three things he comes across and three groups of people he comes across. The first group of people that shaitan comes across in his interaction with human beings are sinners. People who sin, not by mistake or by temptation, sin by the love of sin. You will see that certain people have disobeyed Allah to such an extent that they live in sin and they want to sin and they get an enjoyment from disobeying Allah. And I'm sure you might have met those people, you might have seen those people, classmates, workmates, you know, politicians. They're out there, and what they do is that they love to sin. And sin has become a part of their lives, meaning that it is not, they have no regret, they have no remorse for doing it. You know, they will, for example, do wrong, they will cheat, they will lie, they will steal, and they will have no problem doing it. In fact, they will give themselves a pat on the back and put a feather in their hat for doing it. In fact, it's an achievement for them for doing such things. And these are the people, that one group that Shaitan comes across when he comes to misguide. And the issue is this, Shaitan did not misguide them. You see, really, Shaitan did not misguide them. He did not insinuate anything to them. In fact, when we look at the example, because a lot of people, they want to blame Shaitan. And most of the times, the blame that they want to put, the accusation they want to put, is misplaced. That Shaitan will say, I didn't misguide you all. I had nothing to do with your being bad or evil. Really, I didn't even come to you. You see, a lot of times these people, it's not Shaitan who's misguiding them, it's their own desires in their own nafs that is misguiding them. It is their own nafs that's misguiding them. The first example that I gave about Habil and Qabil. Really, when you look at the environment, because a lot of times we also want to blame something else for our own faults and mistakes. So we say that, oh, it's hard for the youth in America to be good because of peer pressure. Why? It's peer pressure that makes them do that. You will see that sometimes it's true, but a lot of times it is a misplaced accusation. It is not real. Right? We have our own faults and we do wrong. It's our nafs making us do it, no peer pressure at all, but we want to blame someone for it. When we look at the example of Habil and Qabil, and we see that one brother killed another. Now tell me, what peer pressure was there in the society that made him do this sin? The only people who were alive at that time, the only people that he has come across was his father, who's a prophet, was his mother, who's also pure, was his brother, who was good. The only influence he had in his life was a good influence, was a positive influence. So what made him do wrong, commit sin, and kill his brother? It wasn't any influence from outside, it was his own nafs and his own desire that made him do it. So the first sin that is spoken of in the Quran and in Islam is a result of our own nafs, not peer pressure, not any influence of Shaitan. You see, it is our own self that we do it. Many people are misguided, they are wrong, not because of any other influence, but they chose to be that. They have made themselves be like that. They chose wrong, they walked on it, and after a while we have, and we know through hadith and through akhlaq, that what happens is this. When a person sins, this is in the hadith and you might have heard this, when a person sins, there's a black spot that appears on his heart. Not physically, but the heart that is our true feeling, where our feelings are, where our emotion is, where our faith is. That heart has a black spot that is put on it. Then another sin, another spot is put, right? And it goes on, these spots are being put as we do sins. And when these sins now begin to grow, it comes to an extent where the whole heart is darkened and blackened. And once that is blackened, there is no return for it. It's very hard to now bring it back. Very difficult. And that's why some people, they just sin so much that it has become a part of their lives. And now when Shaitan comes across it, what does he do with these people? How does he interact with them? He doesn't need to misguide them. So he doesn't need to work on them. You know what Shaitan does with them? With these type of people, he doesn't need to do anything opposing them. He just uses them and utilizes them to misguide others. So at the end, these people become the tools of Shaitan. They end up becoming the tools of Shaitan. Allah, He speaks about this in the Quran and He says, that this shayateen, the shaitan, yuwaswisu fi sudurin nas, he insinuates in the hearts of men in the chest of man. Who are these people who are doing it? Min al jinnati wal nas, from the jinn and human beings. So jinn, we are not concerned about. That is shaitan and his tribe. But it's the human beings. These human beings who have made themselves such that now they're being used by shaitan. They're being used by shaitan. So you see, a person would come to you and he would say things to you that would make you think it's alright. So these are people who sin, and then the sin that they do. This is another thing that shaitan uses. Let me explain that if you send a salawat. The discussion we are having today, right, is going to be a little subtle. That's why I want you to pay attention, you know, because, and it is something that is useful for us to know. How things work. How does shaitan work? And this is why I want you to now just pay attention to the depth of the issue, right? What is actually happening? You see, whenever someone does sin, what happens? What shaitan does is that he sees the sin, any sin that's being done, and he uses the sin to make it easy for others to do sin. You see what he does? So for example, if someone, let's say, drinks beer, that's one thing. For example, he's ashamed of others and he drinks it inside his home, he's hiding this and that, that's his problem. But someone, for example, openly, you know, drinks wine. Now what happens is that shaitan now, you know, will portray that to the people. And everyone will be like, oh, look at that, astaghfirullah, he drank beer, right? And now he wants to make this new spread. He wants to make this new spread. You know why? Because the more the people talk about this, the more this sin is going to come out in the eyes of the people and they speak about it, the easier it will be for others to do it also. You see, a lot of times the reason Allah, one of the names of Allah is Sattar al-Uyub, meaning that when a person does wrong, Allah hides it from others. Yeah, I did wrong. I washed something that I shouldn't have washed. Allah hides it from others, does not let others know about it. You know what will happen? If others knew the sins of each other, if we all knew the sins of each other, now it's another thing, we'll be all ashamed of each other, but the other thing that will happen is that the sins will become easy for us to do. Because it's common. One of the things that sinners always want is to do the sin in Jamaat. Right? Just like you do namaz in Jamaat, you know, it's more reward. You know, sins, when they're done in Jamaat, you know, it makes it all easy for us to accept that it's good. Right? Because everyone else is doing it, it's a party. Right? It's easy for us to sin when everyone else is doing it. It's commonplace. See, this is what happens. Shaitan uses this sin, wants to sensationalize it, let it be known by others, so that when others know of it and it's commonplace, then everyone else is doing it nowadays. For example, like a business fraud happens a lot of times. People who are in business, you see that it's easy to cheat, it's easy to lie, you know, like you want to sell something on eBay, now instead of being honest and saying, you know, this thing is worn out, you say, barely used, you know. You know, and you say, man, this is wrong, man, this thing is worn out. Right? But say, listen, everyone else writes it that way. You see, because everyone else is doing it, it became easy for us to lie also. This is one of the things that shaitan does when he comes across sin. He sees sinners, and he sees sin, and he utilizes it to draw other people towards his path and misguide them from Allah's path and make you do sins. This is how he utilizes it. And now when you look at that, you will see that it's easy for us to take that one step and then another step, and soon as you know it, we are so far away from Allah, we are so far away from things that now, even when Ashura comes, we're not there. I want to go to Ashura, but I'm so much engrossed in sin that it doesn't allow me to go. Subhanallah. if a person comes for Ashura, at least remembers Imam Hussain, then probably, even with all the sins, right, he might see a hope. He might see a light. He might see some way out of his dreadful life. But if he doesn't even come and doesn't even give himself a chance to be rectified, then how is he going to be rectified? He can't be rectified. And so what happens, Shaitan, he makes you go away and he doesn't want you to go back. So he tries to block off all the way through the sins that we do. He uses the sins in order to make other people sin and bring them closer to a life of sin. Salamat. So this is the first group of people he meets. The first group of things he meets, sinners and sin. And this is what he does with them. Right? He uses them, makes them a part of his army, and influences others through these people, and makes sin and a life of disobedience easy. So now, this is the first group. The second group of people that Shaitan meets, the second group of people that Shaitan comes across when he wants to misguide, when he wants to take people away from Islam, are the people who are good and who want to be good. And who do good. Yes. Like yourself. You want to do good. You are looking for ways to do good. If you find an opportunity, you will do it. Right? If you see someone in need, you will help them. If you see the time of prayer, you go and pray. If you hear the call of azan, you will listen to it. If you are told about a majlis of Imam Hussain, you will attend. So you want to do good. A person wants to do good. So these are do-gooders, and what they are doing is good. Now Shaitan, when he deals with it, you see, it's like, for example, sweets. You know, it's a cake. You know, you make a cake. It's beautiful. It's tasty. You know. And you know, you want to dig into it, it's really nice. But what makes it rotten? Really, what makes it rotten? Mold, you know, flies, bugs, cockroaches come there. Really, you know, yeah, this is what happened. Now, if you see a cockroach walking around on your sweets, right? Would you say that, hey, let me take that cockroach out so I can eat it, you know? Now, it happened with me, you know. I'd come to New York one time, and, you know, obviously, you know, my wife had asked me to get some sweets, you know, from the shops here. So I went to Jackson Heights, you know. Okay, you know that. And, well, there you go. You already know what I'm saying. So what happens is that these things, what they do is that they make food bad. You know, they make good things bad. They contaminate good things. What Shaitan does to good things and to good people is that he tries to contaminate the good that you're doing. You want to pray. Shaitan wants to make your prayer rotten. You want to help someone. Shaitan wants to make your prayer rotten. You want to be good and attend the majlis of Hussain. So Shaitan wants to make this majlis for you rotten, contaminated. This is what he does. Every good thing that is being done, you see, Shaitan is capable of contaminating it. Every good thing that is being done, Shaitan is able to contaminate it. And this is where we need to now try to protect the good that we do. That is what we need to do. Now we did some good. I want to pray. So now Shaitan comes and says, all right, you know, let me help you out there. Right, let me help you. So now, instead of saying, I don't need your help, so we let Shaitan come in. You know, now Shaitan rides our back. You know, he's on our shoulders riding us, you know. And so, when you come to the masjid to pray, you see that maybe not youngsters like you, people who are young, you know, you won't be in that situation yet. But sometimes what happens is that he will, yeah, when you come for prayers, now the issue is not the prayers itself. Now the issue is that which line are you going to pray in? Yes. A lot of people, you know, if they don't get the first line, they feel insulted. You know? There's one person who used to pray in, right behind the Imam of the Namaz, right? Right behind the Alim all the time. And one day he got stuck in traffic. So when he came to the prayers, he was late. And he was standing in the fifth line. Standing in the fifth line, and he felt awkward, that man. You know, I don't feel like praying in the fifth line. Right? He wants to be seen in the first line. Really, in a lot of the majlis you go to Imam Hussein's majlis, as I said, Shaitan meets you there. He says, yeah, attending the majlis is not the issue. Now he diverts the issue in something else. He says, where am I going to sit in the majlis? Right? And, you know, for example, in certain places I went, there is a, you know, a wall of distinction, you know, all the distinguished guests sit here, you know. You know, the rich fat guys, you know, sit right? They all sit on this wall. And if someone else sits there, then everyone sees, why are you sitting here? You know, you don't belong here. And if they don't get that seat, they feel insulted. They feel offended. So now, really, they came to do good. They came for the majlis of Hussein, but he made the effect of that majlis useless for them by diverting them. So good is many things. We want to do good. What is our good that we do? What good that we do? Okay, ibadat is one. Right? Respect, self-respect is a good thing. People should have self-respect. People should have self-respect. So now what happens when a person wants to have self-respect, which is a good thing, a person should not make himself humiliated in front of others. It's one thing to humiliate yourself before Allah. It's another thing to humiliate yourself before others. No, maintaining your self-respect and dignity is a good thing. So now when you want to maintain your dignity, now Shaitan comes in and says, changes that dignity and self-respect into arrogance and pride. Instead of having self-respect, now we have pride. Instead of having dignity, now we are arrogant. You see how it changes that? For example, another good thing that is there, really, these are the good of dunya. When you make the dua, right, about hasanatu dunya, what are the hasanatu dunya? Rabbana atina fid dunya hasana. Allah, give me good in this world. What is this good? These are the good in this world. Self-respect and dignity is one. You know, another one that, you know, which I will, you know, would really want to expound on is self-love. Self-love and selfishness. Selfishness is a good thing. Self-love is a positive thing. And this is why you see that someone who loves themselves and takes care of their own interest are people who will actually tantamount to something. If a person doesn't have self-love, if he doesn't love himself, you see, he'll be all right with destruction. You know, the attitude of someone who loves himself is that, you know what? Because you love yourself, you don't want to see yourself being hurt. If a person starts to go into that and analyze that and reflect on it, then you will see that if he's told that, listen, if you go to hell, this is what will happen to you. There's hellfire. And you know what? There's these pockets, you know, that are made, you know, these chutes. You're put in it, and then boom, like a cannon, you're shot. And you're like, what? You know? And there's scorpions and snakes, unlike the world, you know, who, you know, one bite of theirs, you know, will leave you like ringing in pain for, you know, hundreds of years, thousands of years. And you're like, you look at that. Now, if you have self-love, if you have your own interest in mind, then a person who loves himself will never let himself go into a place or be involved in something that causes harm to himself. You see, the protection from hellfire and the knowledge of hell is for those who care about themselves, who love themselves, who want themselves not to be harmed. But if a person is a fatalist, if a person, you know, hates himself, and he says, I don't care what happens to me, you know, I don't care, has this attitude, this side of person is a fatalist. You know, anyone who said, I don't care, you know, like that. If someone says that, then this guy, they're fatalist, meaning that he really doesn't care about himself. That's why you see that when he, even in the worldly sense, when he wants to go around, he doesn't keep himself well-dressed, he does not maintain himself, he's sloppy. Why? Because of this fatalistic attitude that I don't care about myself. Even if I look bad, I don't care. Even if I'm bad, I don't care. Even if harm happens to me, I don't care. So if that's the attitude, such a person, when he hears about hell, and you'll burn in hell, I don't care. And you're like, what? You don't care? You see, the reason he's like that is psychologically he's a person who doesn't love himself, who hates himself, who has a bad image about himself. And that's how you recognize this person and say, wow, what is wrong with you? Aren't you afraid of this? It's all right, you know. I'll live in hell forever, you know. Really. And such people don't tantamount to anything. They don't become anything. Because really, a person who loves himself, has interest of himself, he will make sure that he does not harm himself or do something that will harm himself. Do something that will harm himself. When you speak about heaven and hell, you see people who love themselves will say, wow, I want to choose this. Really, try an experiment. An objective kid, this and that. Describe him two ways of life. Right? Two lives. You know, I mean, just here in this dunya and there. See, a lot of people now, when you have this, before I give this example and raise this question, let me explain one more thing we said as salawat. When you, for example, are loving yourself, now what does shaitan do? Shaitan comes, and this is a positive thing, self-love. But he comes and he contaminates it. And you know what he makes it into? He makes it into self-worship and love of dunya. The concept of self-love, Allah wants you to love yourself, know your value, and value yourself. Allah wants you to do that. Why? Because when you value yourself, then you will strive for greater things. But if you don't value yourself, really, you'll be happy with any garbage that you're put in. And this is the inspiration and the motivation that makes us want to go to heaven, because I deserve that. I want that. I know my value. I want that. And you strive for it. But if you don't have this, and if you hate yourself, then you're like, I don't care. So here's what happens. Hubbu dunya is the contamination of self-love. Instead of loving that which is really good, we fall in love with that which is mediocre. So shaitan comes to you and says, let's see, you know, you like to have fun, right? Here, I'll show you fun. I'll show you fun. And he shows us dunya. And then when you look at dunya, you're like, oh yeah, this is fun. You see, self-love, the idea, the extremity, the goal of self-love is everlasting happiness. And what shaitan makes us do is settle for short-term happiness. Hubbu dunya, in other words, in psychological terms, is short-term happiness. You know, I want the fun now, That's it. And Allah is saying, that fun is forever. You see, this is what happens. And a person gets hubbul, the love of dunya is what? I just want here, that's it. Whatever I can get, finish. And when you look at the fun here, it's really not lasting. And we explained that before. Nothing in this dunya is lasting. Any fun you want to have is like short-lived. Right away you get into trouble. In fact, you know, if you laugh too much, you will see that, you know, you feel sad a little bit later. If you laugh too much. Yes, you'll see that. If you have too much fun, you see that, you know, it's a roller coaster ride. You go up, you're like, ha ha ha, when you come down, whoa. You know? And this is life. So now when you know life, and we have all experienced it, so I don't need to explain this to you, right? We all know what life is, ups and downs, and happens, you know? One time, you know, you're like elated, the next time you're in misery, you know? This is what life is. So now what happens is that shaitan makes us fall in love with dunya, with these short-term things. Now, if you really raise the question objectively, to any someone, to a kid, to a child, just tell them, hey, listen, what dunya would you like? Would you like to live in a dunya where, for example, you know, you can have, you know, candy, but if you eat a little bit too much, you're going to get a bellyache or tummy ache? Or do you want to live in a world that you can eat as much candy as you want and no bellyache? And every time you eat it, it's better than the last time. Right? That kid will say, what will that kid say? What life would he, what life does he want? Really? You know? Okay, adults, right? Let me come on to example of adults, you know, between just give the example of two lives. Realistically, say that, okay, one life, you have Black Friday sale once a year. You go and spend money there, and now you don't have money for groceries after that. So you have to wait until you can buy new things. Or how about a life that you can buy anything you want and whatever you have is never depleted? It's always there. It's always there. And it never runs out. Wow. Again, this is the reality. The difference between dunya and akhirah is this. Here, whatever you spend, it's gone. There, whatever you spend, it stays with you. If this is a situation, then what life would you choose? What life do you want for yourself? Ask yourself, what life does it want? This is how Allah is describing akhirat and dunya. Now we know what dunya is because we live in it. My friends, this is a choice that we make. A choice of akhirat, jannat. I want jannat for myself. Why would I choose this? And hence, why do I want jannah? Because I love myself. I want good for myself. I'm keeping my self-interest in check. It's for me. And Allah says, it's all good. Really, it's all good. Why? Because when you have self-love and really know the goals of self-love, then that will translate into all the virtues in this life. Self-love translates into virtues in this life, my friends. You want to see good? Good is where? Good, a person who does good to others is someone who loves himself in the real sense of the word. Someone who doesn't love himself cannot adopt and acquire virtues in this world. Really, he can't. Because the person who doesn't like himself, and when you don't like yourself, you project that to others. You project that to others, and I don't care about him. Right? Really, this is what happens. And for such people, death is always for the neighbor. Yes, it's the neighbors who die. He doesn't die. Right? Because whenever you think about death, you think about your neighbors dying. Or other people die. You don't think about yourself dying. You don't think about that. This is the idea, my friends. Really, those who choose bad for themselves, they end up doing what? They end up really being happy with that bad because they're too ashamed to tell the truth. But those who choose good for themselves, you see, they will be honest with the bad. I'll give an example if you say the salawat. You know, there are three groups of people, and this test is done. Three groups of people that they ask them to do a certain chore, a certain thing, right? So what happened is that one group was taken and they said, do this. It was something stupid, you know? And, you know, something, you know, okay, you know, like there are 9 cups, you know? You put one cup over the other, you know? So, blah, 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 blah. Put it up there, they did the work, and they were asked to leave. They didn't get anything for it. The second group was called in. Second group was called in, and, you know, they also, you know, did the same thing, and they were given $10 for it. Right? They were given, all of them, $10 for it. To do that, whatever, chore that they were asked to do. Then a third group was called in, and they, you know, did the same thing, and they were given $100 each for doing that. You know, now all these three groups, you know, were, you know, put in a room to discuss what they did. And as they were discussing, one group was defending what they did as something good. Saying that, well, you know, it's really helpful, you know, really good, really things and that. One group was really upset. One group was really upset and they're saying that this was stupid what we did, you know. We wasted our time doing that, this and that. You know the group that was defending the activity, which group was that? No, the one who didn't get any money. See, this is human psychology, my friends, understand it. One who didn't get any money, they were defending what they did. Because to admit that they did stupid for nothing, is something they didn't want to do, so they're trying to make it look good and defend it. Oh no, it really helps our intelligence, this and that. And the group that, you know, was criticizing the activity was the one who got $100 from it. Because they already got the benefit of that activity, now they are telling the truth about it. Those who are dumb and make dumb decisions, what happens with those people is that they're the ones who defend dumb things and unintelligent things because they don't want to admit that they have made a bad choice or did something that was irrational. This is the issue with people who fall in love with dunya. They defend dunya the most. The reason they defend dunya and want to make it good or make it sound good or want to rationalize the stupidity that they are doing in this life, they are the ones who defend dunya because they have led a life with the goal of waking up in the morning, eating breakfast, going to work, coming back from work, trying to look for a parking space, you know, and then coming home, watching their nightly primetime shows for 2 hours, going to sleep, and then doing it all over again tomorrow. Doing it all over again tomorrow. And they're going on with this life until they get a heart attack or a disease or something like that. And these guys, that's it. That's all life is for them. And now, how can you defend such a life? How can you defend such a movement of life? That's all you want? That's it? That's all you want from life? What a mediocre goal you have chosen for yourself. This is what comes to mind. And such are the people who defend this life. Why? Because they have done it for no reason. Yes, I understand. If you do it and you become a millionaire, that millionaire, if you ask him, he will laugh. And he will criticize. Because he got what he wanted from it. He got what he wanted from it. It's the poor people who justify what they're doing. And they don't realize what they're doing is really monotonous and really doesn't make sense, and they need to have a greater purpose in life. This, my friends, is how, when we look at it, how Shaitan comes, and what does he do? He's in one word, he say it. Zuyyana lahumud dunya. He has made dunya look good for them. This is what Shaitan has done. He takes the good that we do and he contaminates it. And the bad that we're doing, he's making it look good. Dunya is good. Really. This is where it is, my friend. Now, the person who is striving and loves himself, when he looks at dunya, his attitude is different than a person who does not love himself. You know, when a person who does not love himself looks at dunya, what does he say? Well, you know, like all the creation, the heavens, you know, all these creation that he sees it. He admits there's a God. He admits there's a creator. No one says, no, there's no creator. He says, yeah, there's a creator. He looks at it and says, okay, you know, this place has a creator. But a person who loves himself, you know, when he looks at the earth, he looks at the beauty of Allah's creation, what do you say? He doesn't say this place has a creator. He says, wow, what a wonderful creator this place has. You see, his attitude is different. His outlook is different. And now, if we want whatever good we do to protect that good, we need to do what? We need to protect it. Send us salawat. Do you all want to wake up tomorrow? No? So you want to die? So they don't understand the question. The adults do it. You all want to wake up tomorrow, right? So when you wake up tomorrow, is waking up a blessing? Yes, right? Allah has given you life. Right? Waking up is a blessing. Allah has given you life. Subhanallah, when you wake up. So now, when this is a blessing and it is something good and we recognize it, that's when Shaitan comes to you. Yes. He comes to you and sits on your shoulders. Right? Presses you down. You know, because when you wake up and you recognize waking up is a blessing, then you should say, Alhamdulillah. The first thing that should come out of your mouth is, Alhamdulillah. Allah, thank you. All praises for you. I'm waking up now. Right? That's what you should say. And when you get up, you know, you pray. So now, Shaitan comes and says, alright, you know what? I'm going to put my weight on you. So what does he do? He puts his weight on us so we don't get up. So that means don't get up. Now this is in Hadith, right? He doesn't, you know, he puts his weight on us, we don't get up. Now he's wanting, you know, turning around, this and that. And you see, you feel the best sleep you get is at Fajr time. Right? That's the time you feel the most rested and you want to rest. Those sheets feel the best and the covers that you have, they feel so soft in the morning. Right? And it becomes hard for you to get up. Well, Shaitan is making that, you know, making you work harder to get up. So he stands on you, he sits on you, he puts his weight on you, so you don't get up. Now, if you do get up, he starts to cry. But if you don't get up, what happens is that he waits until the time of Fajr goes away. The minute the sun rises, as the, rooster makes its noise and the Fajr rises, Shaitan now sees that he has won and made you sleep through Fajr. So now, in his excitement, because he's been waiting there and he needs to take a leak, so he takes a leak in your ear. So if you feel a wetness in your ear, this the shaitan. Shaitan takes a leak in your ear and says, aha, I got you there. This is the hadith. Right? It happens. You might not feel it, but that's what he does. I mean, why? Because he got you. And you, now, really, have denied a blessing of Allah. Allah gave you this morning. If Allah, shaitan did give you this morning, it's Allah who gave you this morning. So at least you should get up to remember Allah. Get up to remember Him. Allah, thank you for this morning. Thank you for this day. Thank you for another day in my life. Friends, this is what He does. He comes and contaminates every blessing that you get, every good that you do. This is what shaitan does, the second group of people. The third group of people, and this I will explain tomorrow. The third group of people, or the thing that shaitan comes across, that he cannot do anything to, that he cannot make you do, or misguide you, or misguide that thing, is called ikhlas. Ikhlas, sincerity, translated like that. Sincerity. This is, if you want to protect yourself from shaitan, then this is the only way to protect yourself from shaitan, is sincerity. If you have sincerity, then shaitan won't be able to get to you. But sincerity has levels. There are those who are mukhlis, and there are those who are mukhlas. And Allah, when He's speaking, when shaitan is speaking, He's not speaking about mukhlis people, sincere people. He's speaking about mukhlas people. You see, sincerity is a ladder you climb. Those who are climbing the ladder, who have started climbing the ladder, they are called mukhlis. Those who have gone to the higher steps of the ladder, they are called mukhlas. And I'll explain this more tomorrow. How do we protect ourselves from shaitan? That's the only way. Because that's what he says. لَأَغْوِيَنَّهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ I will misguide all of them. إِلَّا عِبَادَكَ مِنْهُمُ الْمُخْلَصُونَ Except those who are mukhlas amongst them. Except those who are mukhlas. How do we become mukhlas? And this is what we need to learn. And know. And understand. Because these two groups, shaitan, one, doesn't need to misguide, they're already misguided. Or two, can contaminate and make them misguided and make you do wrong. These two groups are there. This third group is what shaitan cannot touch. He cannot touch them. And that's the circle we have to go into in order for us to be protected. Yes, my friends, this is it. So inshallah, that is it for today. Really. And learning this shaitan and knowing shaitan and how what he can do and what he cannot do is very important for us, because he is an expert in human psychology. Yes, he knows you very well. You can deny not knowing him, but he doesn't deny knowing you. Yes, he does not deny knowing you. No matter if you want to ignore him, want to run away from him, do anything. But shaitan, on the other hand, is saying that, hey, listen, I want to know you. I want to be your friend. Right? He's there for you. And now you need to know how to deal with him. So I will end here. Just a few things I will mention in regards to really our relationship with Ahlul Bayt, because one of the things really that really helps us is our relationship that we have with Ahlul Bayt. My friends, it is something real that, and we read this in Ziyarat al-Ashura, if you have ever read it, actually read it, not just read it as we do in Ashura, we don't even know what is being said. If you read it, you will see that it is the love of Ahlul Bayt by which we reach Allah. You know? When you read it, it says, Allahumma inni ataqarrabu ilayka. Allah, I am coming near to you. I seek nearness to you. I am near you. wa ila rasulika, and your messenger, wa ila waliyaka, meaning Imam Ali, I am closer to Fatima, I am closer to Hassan, through what? Bi muwalatika. Hussein, with your love, I am closer to Allah, I am closer to the Prophet, I am closer to Ali, I am closer to Fatima. In other words, my friends, when a person attaches himself to Imam Hussein takes him to Allah. He takes you. And this is something that a person, when he reads Ziyarat-e Ashura, must truly understand. Hussein, it's your love that is taking me to Allah. It is your love that is taking me to the Prophet. This is the love. This is what Imam Hussein's love does. Really, if a person truly understands Imam Hussein, if he understands Karbala, if he understands Ashura, then he can truly be able to see those high plateaus that great people have seen, that only great people have seen. Plateaus, mountains, peaks. Subhanallah. We sometimes are, you know, sitting at the base of the mountain and just, you know, seeing how big the mountain is and praising it. You say, you know, like, you know, you sit there at the base of Everest, you look up and say, wow, 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 you're just wowed by it. But just imagine if you can be on top of it, if you can be up there. Right? That is an achievement, that is greatness. And hence, we are saying in Ziyarat-e Ashura, Hussein, through your love, I can reach the peak. I have reached the peak through your love. It is your love that has made me do that. And that's why when we look at the relationship we have with Imam Hussein, one, yes, it's an emotional relationship that's there. That is there for us. There is that love, that emotional attachment we Shias have with Imam Hussein. And that is there. But on the other hand, we have this relationship of objective and goal that we share with Imam Hussein. We share with Ahlul Bayt. That Ahlul Bayt, your goal is the goal of my life. What you want is the goal of my life. This is the Shia. And that's why, my friends, if you want to know what a Shia is, you want to know what a Shia is? Just give me a little example I'll give you, so that from there you understand this. You know, when you wake up in the morning, early morning, let's say 2-3 o'clock, and your eyes open up, and you know, just look at the clock. You know, you're half asleep, half awake, can't even think straight, can't even think right. You just look up at the time. It's like 3 a.m. Just eyes opened up. Look at the time. You see, that moment of awareness and that moment of being awake, what were you thinking at that time? What were you thinking at that time? Are you thinking about Allah? Are you thinking about Imam Hussein? Are you thinking about your Imam? Or you're just like in a day? Nothing. You see, a Shia is so focused in his life that even those moments where he's even half asleep, he's thinking about his Imam. This is where we want to get. That is where we want to get. That focus and that attention, that much care, and that much interest we have, that on even the smallest times we get into this. Mention you a story, really, that even the children of Ahlul Bayt, you know, even children, when they want to give you something, when they make dua for you, it has so much of an effect. I'll tell you a story, take about 5 minutes, right? Just tell you a story so that you understand this. In Kufa, there was a person, you know, the city of Kufa was a metropolitan. There are many people of different backgrounds. It was an army town. So the army was made up of many people, right? So many people from many backgrounds came, different religions also. One of those religions were the religion of Zoroastrians. There are some Zoroastrians there also, right? You know, and these people who were Zoroastrians were well-off people, wealthy people. Now, one of the things in them, right, that they had in their laws at that time was that, you know, for them, brothers and sisters could marry, right? Brothers and sisters could marry. Now, no one practiced it, was really practiced, but one such occasion happened that in Kufa, a person, you know, had his son and daughter get married. So, obviously, now, they're Muslims in majority, and obviously they didn't like Zoroastrians in the first place, they're kafir. But because this person did that, they hated him more. I mean, it was despised, despicable, right? And everyone, like in the town, was like horrified at what was going on. So, you know, there was, you know, after the marriage, you know, there was a person, a Muslim, in Kufa who had a dream, and Rasulullah came in his dream. I'm going through the story fast so that we can get to the real meaning. Rasulullah came in his dream, and he told the Muslim guy that go and tell this person, right? I want you to go and tell this person that I have accepted the dua. I have accepted the dua. Right? You know, and yeah, so the Muslim guy, you know, he woke up and was very happy that he saw Rasulullah in his dream. But then for him to go and, you know, even to that person's house, it was like, you know, like, what will other people think that I'm going to this man's house, you know? He didn't want to go there. And that too, to tell him, you know, that, hey, my messenger came in my dream, you know? And he didn't go. So the second day, the same dream occurred, and Rasulullah came to him and said, I told you to go to that person's house and give him my message. And, you know, again, you know, this person, you know, he got up. He couldn't make himself go. And now the third day, the same dream happened, but this time Rasulullah was angry. He was angry and he said that, if you don't go and tell this person, then you're not from me. You're not a Muslim. I will not regard you as a Muslim. So now this Muslim guy, he woke up. Now he said, I have no choice. I need to go. So he made his way to the house. And now, obviously, as he's entering, he knocked on the door. And he's thinking how awkward this is. You know, it is awkward, right? That, you know, you go to a non-Muslim's house and, you know, say something randomly and he'll be like looking at you, you know? So it was hard for him. So he goes up there, knocks on the door. Someone opens the door. It's a big house. And so what happened was that, you know, he went inside there and he said, you know, I want to meet this person. I have a message for him. So the person comes in the room, he sits down, he says, yes, may I help you, you know? So he tells that, listen, you know, here it is. The messenger of Allah came in my dream and he told me to tell you that he had accepted the dua. You know, there it is. He said it. As soon as he said it, that Zoroastrian fire worshipper looked at him and looked down, said, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. Now, became a Muslim, right? So now this Muslim guy now was really, you know, did not understand what's going on. I told you this and you just heard this and became, well, what is wrong? What is wrong, you know? So he just asked him, listen, you know, what just happened here? Muslim guy saying, what just happened? I don't even know what's going on. Wait, can you tell me what's going on? Right? So what happened is this, my friends, you know? He said, you know, I just had a wedding in my house a few months ago. And in the wedding, you know, that our people are rich people. And rich people, you know, when you invite them, you can't just serve them, you know, just one dish. It has to be like dishes and, you know, 8-course meal with all the, you know, trimmings and everything, right? Because if you bring, you know, rich people to a wedding where there's no trimmings and all that, they'll all say, oh, what kind of a party is this, you know, really? And they have their own extravagant taste, right? So I said, you know, I was like, you know, had the party and these people are coming and the food was being cooked. The food was being cooked and, you know, all of these things. So I was like running around trying to do things and all these things, right? So I came there to the place where the food was being cooked. So now, as I was there, it was next to a wall, and behind the wall was a Muslim house. And the Muslim house, the husband, the father had died, and the mother was alone with, you know, some children living there. And I heard one of the girls inside there tell her mother that, mother, look at the smell of the food that's coming from next door. You know, why can't we make some food at home? You know, we're hungry, we haven't eaten for days. And when I heard that, you know, meaning that comment of that girl, I felt so bad and I felt so wrong that I'm cooking this food for all these rich people who are eating at home anyway, right? And they don't need this. And here I have neighbors who don't even have food, right? So right away, I mean, something came over me and said, I said, you know, I am going to send food, but this food I can't send because I know that they don't regard me as tahir. It's not, you know, for their clean. So what he did is that he called a Muslim chef, you know, and, you know, he came, he said, make some food right away. He left the food that was being made for his guest and wedding, and he just was concentrating to make this food for my neighbors. So this food was being made by a Muslim, so the Muslim was making the food, Muslim chef and everything. After the food was made, I took the food to the house. I took the food to my neighbor's house and knocked on their door. And that, you know, the kids came out, these girls and all these things came out, and they said, yes, may I help you? He says, you know, your mother at home, you know? So the mother came and he said, listen, I'm offering this food, right? This food I've made, you know? So the mother was hesitant. He says, and he understood why she was hesitant. He said, don't worry, this has been made by a Muslim. It's tahir, it's everything that is according to your religion, and I made it for you all. Please accept it from me. So the girl, you know, who was there, right? She's a little girl, 4 or 5 years old. She told the mother, please, mother, accept it. He's giving the food this and that, you know? So she accepted it. So he gave the food. And as they gave the food to the mother went inside. The little girl, she said, you know what? I will ask my messenger, I will ask Rasulullah that he gives you guidance and makes you a Muslim. And no one heard that dua that she made, except for him. And he says that because she made that dua for me, only I know that. And now you are coming and saying that your messenger has accepted that dua, so I know what that means. My friends, when you look at the dua that is made by even a young Muslim, an orphan like that, this is the dua that is so effective that Rasulullah will reply and he will answer that dua. Can you imagine that? This dua that is made by an orphan is so effective. Now can you imagine if such an orphan, a Muslim girl who's an orphan, has made this dua and is accepted by Rasulullah and he answers it. Imagine how is it that the dua of the orphans of Imam Hussein is not going to be accepted? Friends, Sakina, many places that she went to, you see people are seeking du'as from her. When she came to Kufa, when Ahlul Bayt came to Kufa, they were put on an intersection and an intersection so that people can look at them as a spectacle. Sakina was in the lap of Hazrat Zainab.
he was holding him, and it is said that a lady walked by, asked who these people are, and they said that these are prisoners, these are orphans. So when she heard that, she went inside, and you know, she came up to them, she went inside, and she saw that this girl who was in the lap of Zainab, this girl, she was crying, and she told Zainab, she told her aunt that I'm thirsty, is there anyone who would give me some water? So the lady heard that, and she went inside and brought water for this daughter, for Sakina. She didn't know it was Sakina or anyone, she just knew that these were orphans, these are like prisoners or something like that. She just brought some water out and she said, you know, you are thirsty, let me give you this water. And Sakina, she said, thank you for that water. And she almost began drinking it. And the lady said, but please, can you make some dua for me also? Can you make some dua for me also? Sakina, she did not drink the water. She put the water aside and says, tell me what dua to make. I'll make the dua before I drink the water. So the first dua, my friends, I want you to understand, this is Sakina. She had just lost her family the day before. She had just lost her family. The wounds that are inside her heart are still fresh. There, she is physically worn out. She's sitting there thirsty, and now she's asking this lady, tell me the dua, and I will make dua for you before I drink this water. So the first dua that the lady asked for, she said, please, can you make a dua that my children don't become orphans like you? My children don't become orphans like you. Sakina raised her small palms in the sky and says, Allah, do not make her children orphans like us. Do not make her children orphans like us. And the lady said, I have one more dua for you. Can you read this dua for me also? Say this dua. He says, what is that? He says, task Allah that he helps me to go to Medina. He helps me to go to Medina. When Sakina, she said, Allah helps you to go to Medina. Now when Zainab heard that, now Zainab is asking the lady, tell me, why do you want to go to Medina for? Who do you know in Medina? He says, in Medina? Oh, my teacher lives there. My teacher lives there. He says, who's your teacher? My teacher is Zainab, the daughter of Fatima. I have learned from her. I used to go to her house, you know, and she used to teach me. And Zainab, when she heard Medina, when she heard her name, she said, would you recognize Zainab if you see her? Would you recognize her if you see her? He says, why not? Of course I know her. I would recognize her. Then Zainab said, come close to me. Because Zainab was hiding her face with her hair. She would not let anyone see her face. When she came close to Zainab, Zainab departed. She parted her hair in half. And her face now became clear for the lady. And she looked at Zainab. And her impression went. The color from her face flushed. She went pale and said, my teacher Zainab, what is wrong? How are you in this situation? You have come here. What is wrong? What happened? Where is my master Hussein? And Zainab says, you want to see Hussein? Then turn around. Look up there. When she turned around and saw the spear. And spear, the head of Hussein is stuck there. She looked at Imam Hussein's head and said, As-salamu alayka ya Abba Abdullah. أيام القلب ينقلبون يا محمود بحق محمد يا علام بحق يا فاطر السماوات بحق خاتمة يا مصير بحق يا قديم الأحسان بحق يوسف الله give us the توفيق and the blessing to be on the right path the wisdom to understand your guidance peace to the many prayers of our imam may cause his heart to when he comes وآخر الدعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين يا حسين